Hello, and welcome to the Television Spotlight on the Comic Book Cage podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about a television show that we think you'll enjoy. In this episode, I am joined by my sister Kay, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on the fourth season of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to spoil, obviously, the fourth season, the various movies as part of the cinematic universe, possibly the Netflix stuff, also possibly a couple of different comic book titles, including but not limited to Ghost Rider, some of the Inhuman stuff, and other things that I think they've drawn on for fourth season.
And there's always the possibility of compare and contrast with the DC TV shows.
Yes. I would say, out of the four seasons for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., this is right up there near the top.
Yeah.
I would say, as far as complete seasons, this is probably the best. I would say the later part of the first season was really strong.
Yeah.
But the series started a little weak.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And this was the first season where I felt like the writers had mapped out the full season, had a good plan for the full season.
It was a very full season. It didn't feel like there were any throwaway episodes. There were times when it was, okay, wait a sec, where is this character? But when they went and found where that character was, they'd been busy doing good things, plot-wise. It wasn't, well, we forgot about that character for a moment.
Yeah, there were no extraneous characters. There were no false starts or major dangling plot lines and stuff like that. They went through, I would say, at least three major arcs and then an epilogue that really kind of pulled everything together. And there was a definite, the first led to the second, led to the third.
Yeah, there was an overriding Ada and the Doctor arc to it all.
Yeah, it was never like you would get through with one storyline, get to a nice clean cutoff, and then they'd start some other adventure that was disconnected.
Yeah.
And the use of the life model decoys throughout, I thought was very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Very well handled, well done, and went in some directions that felt fairly different than much of what they've done in the comics. Although there's an aspect of, well, let's before I get into that, let's go real quickly just what those kind of arcs were. The opening arc was with Ghost Rider and the Darkhold, which is a magic tome of knowledge in the Marvel Universe, heavily used in the Marvel Knights stuff in the 90s.
It's very dangerous to open that book.
There's usually the concept of with magic comes a cost.
But more than that, it's people seemed to have like a compulsion come over them once they opened it and they read it.
Definitely, it had major ramifications and corrupted them in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
So there was that in the start of the life model decoy is kind of a subplot sort of a thing. Then I think the whole life model decoy got in very big there in the middle. And then that led into a virtual reality arc that lasted surprisingly long, like 5-6 episodes at least.
Yeah.
Where it's, you know, they rebranded slightly as Agents of Hydra, because in this virtual reality, Hydra had taken over.
Well, and that had the interesting twist of if you could enter a virtual reality in which basically one major regret in life had been selected to be changed.
What I liked is they had set up well before that arc that this world was that expansive.
Yes.
That it was like simulating the entire planet. But even before then, they had set up the concept of the virtual reality a few episodes, in like two episodes earlier, or two different episodes earlier in the season, I should say. One where early in the season, I think Gemma was, and Fitz were, one was showing it to the other, I forget who, and it's like, here's a training sequence or whatever.
Yeah.
And then later they show it to Phil Coulson. And then it gets, so, I mean, it's not like it was dropped into, and suddenly there's this brilliant VR world that you can't tell the difference from.
Yeah.
you know, they had set the stage for that well.
Well, and we should back up to mention the doctor, Rothschild? I'm forgetting his
name. Oh, I forget his name.
But he was from the end of last season.
Well, and it had been long enough since we'd seen the end of the third season that I was having a hard time placing specifics. And it wasn't until late in the game. It's like, oh yeah, didn't he develop the machine that would create the either create or turn people into primitive slaves or whatever?
Yeah, his whole idea then was basically you can do anything with science. And as I recall, it was kind of a, you could take the Terrigen and create what you wanted and control what happened to people when they were exposed to it. Now,
that's right.
Happened to be making the primitive slaves because he was still perfecting.
It was customized in humans.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right.
But he's one of those guys that he's so caught up on the discovery, the science, the revelation, that you really need this guy in the right hands.
Well, he's the quintessential misguided scientist.
Well, I almost consider him the unguided scientist in terms of he doesn't stop to think about ramifications, consequences. He simply wants to discover. And if he falls under Shield's hands from the start, then presumably what he's discovering at Sarah will be used for good.
He needed somebody to be his moral compass.
Yes.
He was too lost in the journey.
Yes.
Now, what was interesting is how, over the course of this season, he goes through a fairly clear arc.
Yes.
There's what he portrays himself to be, the bad person we know him to be after reveal, but then his journey of redemption that takes the rest of the season.
But part of the bad person we know him to be is after he read the Darkhold.
True. Well, going back, he was to corrupted, that, but he was highly corruptible.
Exactly. Exactly. Going back to that compulsion and that corruptive influence that takes hold. And when you have someone unguided who's easy to corrupt.
Yeah.
And you expose them to the Darkhold.
Well, and the actor did a really good job with the role.
He did.
He was conniving when he needed to be. He was sympathetic when he needed to be. You could believe when he would betray people, and you would believe when he would stand up and do the right thing.
Well, the only time he came out of nowhere on me was towards the end in the framework, when he was seemingly willing to betray people for a real body once more. And that was when I called out loud to you. That doesn't make sense, because why would he want to be a real person, a real human again? Because the life model decoy, Ada, has killed his real body.
Yeah, but it goes back to, I mean, to me, that didn't bother me. His whole goal was immortality.
With Agnes. He didn't want to be immortal alone. He wanted to be immortal with love.
I took it as solve one problem at a time. Stay alive, then figure out the rest.
See, when he turned on Fitz's people at the end and said, I was willing to do anything to get him here, to get him out of the framework, suddenly it did make sense.
But this was one of those seasons where there are a lot of who can we trust, who can we not, is it going left, is it going right? And there were one or two places where, particularly with the life model decoy stuff, I wasn't entirely sure which directions they were going.
I wasn't sure why Ada was trying to replace all the top people at S.H.I.E.L.D., what her goal was.
One, not to get shut down.
Okay.
Beyond that, not sure. What got me was during that sequence, and this is in the LMD arc, where she has successfully replaced Mac, Coulson, May, Fitz, although we don't know Fitz initially, and Mace.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in the lab with Fitz and Simmons. We're shown a screen implying Simmons is the LMD.
Mm-hmm.
And throughout the entire scene, partially because we were prejudiced to think she was the LMD, her and Fitz are, you know, basically going at it.
Having a standoff.
And it's a matter of, you know, is she about to kill Fitz? Is Fitz, wait, Fitz is the robot. Oh, wait. And, or is he? They walked that line exceedingly well.
They did. Well, and the relationship between Fitz and Simmons has come so far over the course of the four seasons, but really that scene hinged in a lot of ways on the relationship between those characters.
I think this season gave those two actors much, much better material to work with.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they had some decent stuff before, but there was a little, you know, doe-eyed love sort of thing in previous seasons. Oh, he'd crossed the galaxy for her, but he got to play the evil scientist at Hydra in the virtual reality world. Again, the is he the robot, is he not, can you believe him or not in that one scene.
Mm-hmm.
And Gemma as a character really stepped up this season.
Yeah.
Being higher ranking in S.H.I.E.L.D. than many people, and her being one of the two people going into the virtual reality to get the others out, and having no resources starting out.
Well, and waking up in the virtual reality, expecting to wake up in whatever avatar of herself exists there, and clawing herself out of a mass grave.
Yeah. They did a lot of very interesting stuff, and I felt basically every character got something with some plot line, some scene with some serious meat to it to really deal with. Mac with the daughter in the virtual reality world.
Yeah.
That had been fairly set up before.
Yeah.
And in a way that it's not, oh, geez, this is going to come in and be a big thing later. It's like, no, it was good for the episode. Oh, it does play out later.
Yeah.
So I thought they, again, to me, that shows a foresight in the writing and foreshadowing of things without telegraphing.
Yeah.
Which is a tough thing to do sometimes.
The thing they did a slow sell on that frustrated me was the new director.
Yeah.
Just he was interesting. Every aspect of him was a slow sell.
Once they gave the name of Jeffrey Mace, I'm like, I know that name. And I was pretty sure he was the Patriot from the comics. And after we watched this, what, 5 episodes one night, 7 the next, and then we finished it off today.
Yeah.
With another, somewhere in there. I mean, we marathon this over a couple of days. But after the first one where he'd been introduced, I guess it was 5, 6, 7, and then we finished off. Anyways, I verified that he was indeed, that was the name of the Patriot in the comics. And the Patriot is one of many, go figure, patriotic heroes that Marvel has had over the years. And there was a story done, I think it was in Captain America Annual, back in like the 70s or 80s. And I chased it down because I knew about the story before I had a chance to read the story. And it was how Captain America is put on ice in World War II and then thought out current day, which of course current day shifted by, 30, 40 years since I read since the story was taking place, because, well, it was published back then. But the point of this particular story was just because Steve Rogers was unavailable didn't mean they didn't still need Captain America.
Yeah.
So they had found other people to fill in. And one of the things they tended to do was, well, there's this other patriotic guy. He goes by the Patriot, the Spirit of 76, or whomever. Well, he's clearly got the right mindset, close enough physique. You know, we'll give him a little plastic surgery, whatever. Does he even need that if he's in the mask?
Yeah.
He will take on the mantle of Captain America.
Well, there was something going on early between Coulson and Mace of, I wanted an Inhuman, I got you.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of the, okay, we're doing a slow sell on I don't know what. And well, Coulson didn't know about the injections.
Coulson had made recommendations and had had certain criteria. And this was the guy he got instead. It wasn't somebody he had known, he had vetted, or he had picked.
Yeah. Well, and I think vetted may be the word for it, because they're handling the Inhuman Registry.
Yeah.
And it wasn't someone he was aware of.
Well, and Coulson, since Fury had handed over S.H.I.E.L.D. to him, was in charge, knew all of the major players. So to get this random guy, essentially, was not to his liking. And I get that. I thought that played well. I thought Jason O'Mara did a terrific job.
He really did.
Particularly later in the season. And it was interesting because at one point when it's like, well, we got this guy or whatever, I'd wanted Steve Rogers. I really wish there'd been a comment of, well, could have been Tony Stark.
Yeah.
Who in the comics was one of the leaders of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
Or directors, I should say.
You know, what we haven't touched on is the Watchmen and Senator Nadir.
Haven't touched on that. And I also want to touch on Ada.
Yeah. Well, I was just saying that the Watchmen and Nadir were kind of an arc.
To me, that was part of the whole thing going on during the Ghost Rider.
Okay.
Section, or maybe a little later.
See, that was the thing. It kind of overlapped, and
it was very much picking up the Inhuman storyline at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
And the Daisy was hunting the Watchdog. This is how we had to find out who's running S.H.I.E.L.D. because Coulson is and Mac are going out on assignments and such like that. It took a couple of episodes at the beginning to reset the status quo, and I was fine with that.
Well, and you've got Senator Nadir clearly anti-Inhuman, clearly saying, you know, if there's an agency that seems to be protecting Inhumans, are they also protecting humans? And very much an equality stance throughout her language. But then when it turns out that she has a brother who's an Inhuman, it kind of...
What confused me is the brother was Inhuman, but she was not.
Yeah.
And, you know, I get genetics and stuff, but the implication had always been in the comics that that gene pool kind of wins out, if you will. Whether you get the Terrigenesis, whether you get the powers or not, it's one thing. But, you know, if either of your parents was an Inhuman, you are now an Inhuman. Or you were born an Inhuman, I should say, not become one.
Yeah, but you're considered to be of that class of people, if you will.
Well, if either parent has the gene, you get the gene.
Yeah.
It is more dominant than not having. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's not a 50-75% chance, 25%, you know. It's just, if, you know, it wins out. It's the stronger gene, if you will. So the when she was revealed not to be an Inhuman, that was a little surprising. But then when the Watchdog guy turns out to be one, and this is a guy who's devoting his life to hunting down Inhuman monsters.
Yeah.
I thought that was well done. He seemed to essentially be the Nitro character from the comics, who's a guy who can just explode himself.
Yeah.
And it's funny because in the comics, there was the Stanford incident where you've got the new warriors, young teen heroes, doing a reality show about themselves. And Nitro blows up and kills 600 people. And they're kind of blamed because, well, they're doing a reality show, if they'd known what they were doing, if they'd been properly trained, all that kind of stuff. Which led to the mutant or the Superhero Registration Act, which is the equivalent of the Sokovia Accords that we have in the movies and stuff here.
Mm-hmm.
So bringing him in, I thought, was kind of fitting on that. I was surprised that once they got him contained, poof. He's done, he's gone.
Yeah.
But he was also kind of the end of the Nadir story arc at that point. But I liked how there was a call back to it in the virtual reality world with the Hydra stuff. And that's one of the key plot points when Sky is able to take knowledge from the real world and leverage it in this simulation.
Yeah.
But I also thought at that point, bringing back Ward was really well done.
That was amazing.
Bringing Trip back for a bit was great.
That was beautiful.
The actress they got to play Mac's daughter was terrific.
Oh, she was amazing, yeah.
There was a lot of things. And the guy who played Fitz's father did a good job. Didn't like the character, but the actor did great.
I was going to say, that was one of those, I kept trying to figure out, why is this character responsible for Fitz being the way he is? It just kept nagging at me with your dad is a security flunky riding your coattails, but he's responsible for you being a monster manipulated by Ada.
I was never clear what his role was in Hydra, but I will say during those Hydra episodes, the recreation of the Triskelion is the Hydra headquarters.
That was great. Really great.
All the way down to the elevator that Captain America fights in
yeah.
One of the movies and such being used. I mean, they just, the effects I thought were really well done this season.
Mm-hmm.
Some were a little gross here and there, the 3D printing body sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But just not only was the story solid throughout, the acting was good throughout, they had more material, deeper material to work with this time around.
Definitely deeper.
And the effects were terrific.
When we got to the framework, I kept trying to puzzle out if Ada was saying the only thing she changed was she fixed one regret for each person, then why were certain things the way they were? Well, we know Ada lies. Ada was trying to insert herself in and give herself the life she wanted and make sure the things she wanted invented were invented.
I took some of that as the regrets that were fixed were sometimes in the past, and that reordered the dominoes so they fell a different way.
I get that, but what happened? What one regret was fixed, or what went unchanged? That Ward and Sky were happily ever after as Hydra agents together.
Again, both wound up being members of S.H.I.E.L.D. in the real world. Hydra supplants S.H.I.E.L.D., so we don't have enough information to go on for that.
Yeah, it just, yeah.
I didn't see it as a problem. They had to wind up somewhere. I thought they did a good job later explaining why was Gemma in the mass grave.
Yes.
Oh, Ada as Ophelia had taken her spot in Fitz's life.
Yeah.
You know, so there was some strategic edits that were happening.
Yeah.
And certainly Ada was not playing fair because she could still control aspects of the simulation from within.
Yeah.
But this whole framework, virtual reality stuff, that seemed very much like some of the stuff that was done in the, I think, 12-issue ongoing series of Avengers AI. Which featured the Vision, a Doombot, the Son of Ultron, who was one of the runaways, an LMD or two, Machine Man, numerous, you know, mechanical synthetic life forms.
Mm-hmm.
And there was, again, a virtual reality world or whatever, for just the software entities, if you will. So I'm not saying this was lifted from that, but it seemed to be a point of inspiration.
Yeah.
But the whole thing of flipping, you know, putting a artificial person in the real world and then putting a real person into an artificial world had a nice symmetry. Likewise, going super science and mixing in supernatural to kind of make the science rules fluid.
Yeah.
Was well handled.
Yeah.
Because there was never a sense of, well, anything can happen now, so why bother doing science?
Well, no, there was definitely an aspect of, in the framework, we can get Fitz to do research he would never ethically be willing to do in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
We have all the information. And part of that is because the Doctor had gradually gotten brought into S.H.I.E.L.D. more and more. So presumably Ada had had access to S.H.I.E.L.D. So I'll buy that.
Well, it also goes down to, we saw how with Nadir's brother, Hydra in the virtual reality was testing his genomes and stuff like that, and that Fitz had done this to numerous other people.
Yeah.
So when it's revealed that when he built her a body in the real world, she's got inhuman powers.
Yeah.
And not just one or two, but like as many as they needed.
Yeah.
And we wound up seeing the teleporter that we'd seen in the previous season, mm-hmm. Lincoln's electrical stuff. Mm-hmm. Do we see her really use any other powers?
VJ's healing.
VJ's healing. With VJ, though, that I still think there's a little bit of a drop plot line there because
yeah.
I had thought his power was almost like a super speed ninja sort of a thing. Up until he got shot by his sister, presumably dumped in the ocean, and then re-cocooned.
Yeah.
I don't know that we ever saw him again after that.
Not in the real world.
Not in the real world. So there is something.
Yeah.
That would be the one plot line I could think that they kind of dropped.
Yeah.
Because it implied he would be coming back yeah. and not in the virtual reality. I liked how they brought the Patton Oswalt's characters back for some of the stuff with the life model decoys. That was fun. What else? I was surprised, particularly at first, just how long Ghost Rider was around.
Yeah.
And I liked how, because May had been replaced by an LMD during that arc, that at the end, when the real one's back and Coulson's having to bring her up to speed, it allows him to remind us, the audience,
yeah.
of Ghost Rider, who shows up another episode or so later to tie everything together.
Yeah.
And it was just much, much tighter writing this season.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
Because there was the point with Skye's father, I guess last season, where it's like, yep, let's go assemble this bunch of supervillains, and doesn't really do anything with them. They were kind of lame.
Yeah.
You know, whereas here we get a few of the Inhumans we'd seen before, a couple of new people and stuff, but it was, things fit together better.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know,
there was a lot of framing people for things. Watchdogs framing Inhumans for power outages and crimes, things like that.
Nature of the Beast for a spy show.
Oh, yeah.
Who can you trust? What can you believe?
Yeah. But as you're watching it through S.H.I.E.L.D.'s eyes, there's always that, okay, we know we trust Daisy, so we don't believe Daisy's the one who did it.
Yeah, but there were a couple of times, particularly with the LMGs having replaced some people, that we were led to believe certain people were not themselves and had been replaced that were not, and
mm-hmm.
a few things like that. I particularly like the scene where Daisy runs into the containment module where there's like 30 of her.
Yes.
That I thought was fun.
Well, Daisy and Gemma trying to talk one another down with the, I'm real, you say you're real.
Mm-hmm.
How do we show? And there was a lot of jokes about show, don't tell.
Well, and it was some good character moments in something that, because they'd had a few seasons of these characters,
mm-hmm.
resonated a bit more than if this had all been done like the first season.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be, who are these characters? Why should I care?
Yeah.
And do they know each other well enough? And there were a few times here where some of the characters didn't know each other well enough. When Mace was questioning Gemma.
Yes, yes.
She's like, I don't really know.
Yeah.
You know, and also between Mac and Skye, where Skye had no idea who Hope was.
Yeah, she knew he had lost his hope.
Mm-hmm.
But she hadn't understood what that meant until she was in an interrogation room with a 10-year-old going, you're the hope he lost. I had no idea.
Yeah.
And it was so beautifully done.
That's the sort of thing where I'm sure if we were to go back to the previous season, there had to be some comments from Hunter or Bobby to kind of lay that groundwork.
Yeah.
That just kind of roll by at the time. But then it comes to, they play fair.
Yeah.
On a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
And that's something where if you don't, it really kind of, throws the story out of whack pretty seriously as well. What do you mean the butler did it? I didn't even know the guy had a butler, kind of a thing.
Well, it's funny because one of the things I was loving in the first third to two-thirds of the season before we went into the framework was the witty quips.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get into the framework where we're in the digitized universe that is less creative, if you will. More stilted, and we're not getting as many of the quips. And I mean, it feels natural for these people who don't know their true selves and don't have the personalities we're used to.
What I liked is when we finally get Coulson, I think it's when they take over the TV station, and it's like, hey, I hear you were looking for us. And then past him is Skye with a, yeah, he's back.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just a nice kind of moment there.
Yeah.
And most of the actors at this season played like two or three different versions of themselves. The
yeah.
LMD, the real version, the framework version. The one actor that I think just did a sensational job was the one who played Ada.
Yeah.
She did a very...
Well, let's break it down. She did her robot self as Ada.
The original Ada.
She did Agnes.
Agnes with the accent, yeah.
Mm-hmm. The Australian dying version of herself.
Ada 2.0.
Yes, that's very true. Which means technically Ada 1 was Ada pre and post Darkhold.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was the Ophelia version in the
yes,
the framework. I keep wanting to call it the Matrix.
Well, they cracked a Matrix joke at one point, which doesn't help because that kind of sunk
in. There were a lot of references like that throughout.
There were, well, in early...
When Daisy was, or Skye, Daisy, whatever, was commenting on how Ghost Rider went through the Hellmouth.
Mm.
It's a Buffy reference. Well, Sweeten show, go figure.
Yeah, but early on when Ada is first basically trying to steal the Darkhold and has launched her attack, and Mac is doing, you know, doesn't anybody watch robot movies?
Because nobody's seen the movies from the 80s.
Yes.
It was fun when Yo-Yo was basically, it's like, making the same comment. He's like, I know.
Yes, and the two of them were like, when this is over, we are forcing Fitz and that doctor to watch all of the Terminator movies. Even Terminator Salvation.
It's like, they've got it coming.
Yes.
I would love for them to touch on that next season.
Well, they even had a comment when they're pinned down in the hangar where Mac was saying that he has a special clause in his life insurance that if he dies in a robot attack, it pays out extra.
Probably had to get that written pre-Ultron.
But it was very much a, my brother's gonna make out like a bandit if I die here.
Well, and what was funny is there were references to, I mean, doesn't anyone remember Ultron? Doesn't, you know?
Yes, yes.
So there were not as many, there was no direct touch point or lead in or out of any of the movies, but there was a clear sense of this is taking place in that same world.
There was also a clear sense it was taking place in our world. Alternative facts, fake news. Oh, yes,
there was aspects of our world that had bled into theirs, but were well used.
Was it Make Society Great Again?
That I don't recall, but certainly Coulson's newscast or whatever.
There was definitely a Make a Great Again that got in there.
Okay, that was probably one of the Hydra posters or something.
You know, I mean, it was just, it was to the point that at one point I actually thought about looking up air dates to figure out when it timed to the real world, because I was seeing an increasing tie.
Well, certainly after the Ghost Rider arc, it would have been well after the election.
Yeah.
But there was definitely some commentary there. But ones that made perfect sense in the narrative.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I mean, when you're in the framework and you're in a Hydra-controlled world, and you've got the Hydra puppet newscaster broadcasting the Hydra-approved news.
Yeah.
To the point he's gone to the head of Hydra to ask, basically, what should my top story be? And they've told him.
Mm-hmm.
Having them say, you've heard the fake news, you've seen the alternative facts, we're going to show you the footage and let you judge for yourself.
There's a definite aspect of, you can be told certain things, but there comes a point where if you can see the actual footage, judge for yourself.
Yeah.
And that doesn't surprise me any, not to get too political about it, but there were some political ads before the election that were very pointed along those lines of don't buy into the hype or what you're being led to believe or whatever, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, in the framework, and I mean, let's backtrack on May. May gets put into a simulation when she's taken hostage to try and keep her sedated and calm. And it's not working. She's fighting her way out of it. She fights her way to consciousness. And it's because they don't understand Melinda May.
Well, and we see that one. She's in, like, a spa.
Yes.
Nice, relaxing thing. And I'm like, have you ever met this woman?
Yes.
So then they put her in one where she's got, as they refer to it, a dragon to slay.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's battling her way out of the prison there or whatever.
Well, she's in the actual apartment where they've confined her in the lab, and it's like reality, only it's the virtual reality.
But there was also the comment of she's getting faster and faster at this. We're having to reset the game because we can't keep up. And that's what leads to the framework going kind of global. There are no edges to reach on a sphere.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and one of the things they decide is we're having problems programming a scenario complex enough, et cetera, et cetera. But if we could find a memory, a regret that she wants to relive and conquer.
Yeah, let her fix this. Let her, if she's going to win anyways, let's give her one she wants to win.
Yeah, yeah. And in that, in doing that, make her want to stay.
Yeah. Well, and that is, again, how Hydra took over the world and the virtual reality and all of that stuff. And there's a lot of kind of metaphysical, is any of this real or not?
Well, but what fascinated me was it went back to that Bahrain mission.
Yeah, well, again, the callbacks this season.
Yeah.
if you know the references or whatever, are great. And if you don't, I mean, it's just a matter of, okay, you know, they reference to the cavalry or whatever, her nickname and stuff. Might have been footage from that episode, might not have been. But either way, if you know it, if you realize it's from a previous episode, you can go hunt that one down and go rewatch that.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was a sense of history that this season had that I didn't feel previous seasons had as well.
Yeah.
Because the characters hadn't had time to have the history yet.
There was a definite sense of world building. There was a sense that this director wasn't just responsible for this one little S.H.I.E.L.D. base and this one little S.H.I.E.L.D. team. He was responsible for the face of S.H.I.E.L.D., the image of S.H.I.E.L.D., the global reputation of S.H.I.E.L.D.
This is the first season where I felt they've gotten away from, here's the six-member team of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
Because we see a number of other people. And I also liked how, with Mace, he was trying to find his place on the team, was very aware he was trying to find his place on the team at one point.
We have very football-heavy episode on that.
But I liked how at one point he and Coulson were having kind of a, well, how did you deal with this?
Yes.
And Coulson was referencing the Avengers movie.
Yeah.
You know? And those kind of callbacks are great. And I think really benefited. I mean, to me, that's where continuity adds to the show.
Yeah.
I'm willing to bet if we were to go back to first season, we would have gotten some references to Fitz's father, how he was never around, things of that sort.
Yeah.
That come out and bear fruit this season.
Yeah.
Not to say they were necessarily meant to back then to lead to this, but they had those seeds planted and this is what they were able to harvest.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, the decision to bring Trip back in the virtual reality, if they had wanted to bring Hunter and Bobby and a few others back, that would have been fun.
See, I understand intellectually why they decided that Ada would be shutting down the framework. I can see where they went with that. But I kind of wanted the framework to be allowed to remain and for the Doctor and Trip to tell Mac, you know, you've got a fight out there to go fight, but we'll stay in here and we will protect your hope.
Mm-hmm. I don't understand why they couldn't find a server farm to go have as a safe playground there.
Yeah.
I mean, they'd obviously been able to do a training simulation.
Yeah.
So you can do a room, you could do the base.
Yeah.
Move everyone into there and be done with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it made sense. They played it well with the shutdown. I also liked how when people left the thing, there was kind of the ripple as it readjusts or whatever.
Yeah. Well, Ada knew Mac was still in there, and she was trying to hurt S.H.I.E.L.D. Yeah. That was my take on the shutdown.
Well, and distract S.H.I.E.L.D. Keep them busy.
Yes.
Most of the things that happened seemed to be motivated reasonably well from a character perspective.
Mm-hmm.
The Russian guy, a little less so. Not just in terms of what his motivations were, but more towards Ada's motivation of severing his head, giving him a robot army to control.
She got mad at him. I mean, it was an emotional response based on his treatment of her, and it was revenge.
Yeah, well, and again, that actress who played Ada, the final version of Ada, the human one.
Yeah.
I mean, she was just emotionally all over the place, and the actress did a terrific job with that.
Well, and I loved the way Fitz was dealing with her and talking with her and rationalizing with her and constantly reminding the audience that from his perspective, every emotion we've spent 25 years learning to deal with, every experience we've spent 25 years learning to handle, just hit her in one moment.
Well, the scene where Fitz and Ada are in the containment center and Gemma's watching.
Yeah.
There's are Fitz and Simmons, is the relationship going to survive this?
Yeah.
They've just come out of the virtual reality where he was just this monster. She had watched him kill people. He was about to kill her.
Well, and she's already found out from Coulson and from May, who were as deeply immersed in there as Fitz was, without the understanding she had and the memories she had from the real world. She's asked them, you feel like you woke up, right? And they're like, no.
two lives now.
Yeah.
It's like they'd lived the other one. But Gemma having the emotional reaction to, you know, Fitz is saying it's over, is it not, you know, that kind of a thing. Fitz going through that kind of emotional journey and having to start talking through Ada through an emotional journey she's just totally ill-equipped to have.
Yeah.
And then there's the one point where he's basically telling Ada, there's only room in my heart for one, and it's her, Gemma.
Yeah.
Which, of course, is a good moment for Gemma, a good moment for Fitz, horrible moment for Ada.
Yeah.
Who then flips into psycho ex-girlfriend mode.
Well, and Ada is totally ill-equipped to understand that now that she suddenly has free will and free choice, she has lost what she had in the framework.
Yeah. The emotional journeys, particularly in that one scene and how things were.
Yeah.
And he's realizing, oh, wait, I think I need to readjust how I handle this situation.
Yeah.
You know, and again, you look back at the Fitz character first season and just, you know, emotionally challenged and socially challenged. He and Gemma kind of were at the time.
Yeah.
And how they've evolved and whatnot. It was just terrific material. If the show had had this quality of writing the previous three seasons, we would have a lot more Marvel shows currently on the air.
I agree.
Not just waiting in the wings.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, we've got Legion that's aired, but now we're going to have Inhumans, we're going to have Runaways, Gifted, Cloak and Dagger.
Well, isn't Inhumans the one that's tried to spin off once or twice before and just not managed to? But based on this season, I can see why they're finally going to.
Inhumans was going to be a movie, and I think they may have just changed gears and said, let's try this as TV.
Well, I thought Bobby and...
That was going to be Marvel's Most Wanted.
Ah, got it. Okay.
But they've tried to spin stuff off of this. And of course, we had two short seasons of Agent Carter and stuff.
She got quite a few mentions here.
Yeah. Again, the references here this season were great. But I think this was just top-notch writing and so much better. I mean, I enjoyed the other seasons, but there were a few that were really rough to watch.
Yeah.
Third season probably being the main one. And there was a redundancy to S.H.I.E.L.D. birthing Hydra and having to fight it a few times. And once again, we go back to that plot line here. But it's at least born out of a simulation sort of a thing. So it didn't bother me this time.
It didn't bother me this time. This time, Ward, the serial betrayer,
yes,
had excellent payoff. And I know a lot of people who have wanted Ward to have a redemption. And he got it.
He got it. And using the Triskelion, the visuals we see of that, to me, there was enough payoff there of we're taking this show and it is clearly set in the cinematic universe.
Yeah.
Same sets, same, you know, this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
To me, this graduated the show up a level.
Yeah.
Now, and to a level it needed to be at.
When, though, does this season time out, or do you know, in comparison to, as I recall, Joss Whedon stepped back from the cinematic universe?
This is probably after he stepped back from the cinematic universe. That's not to say his fingerprints are so much on this, because he's also taken over Justice League.
Interesting. Okay.
I
was just wondering if maybe this is what comes from him having more time to pay more attention here.
Certainly possible. I don't know. It wouldn't surprise me. Something changed this season on the writing.
Yeah.
And it shows in a very significant manner.
Now, bad comparison to DC shows, but the DC shows are basically single hero with a team behind them.
Mm-hmm.
You've got single powered Inhuman Daisy with kind of S.H.I.E.L.D. team behind her for at least part of the season. I'm not sure they're really, I mean,
but one of
by the end of the final episode, they'd pretty well come together as a team, but they fracture a lot.
They do, but to me, the hallmark of this season is every character had a very clear arc.
Yes.
And the point of this season was bringing the band back together.
took all season.
That May even made that comment early on of Mace broke up the band.
Yes. Yes.
So the fact that it takes a little while to, or not a little while, it takes the entire season and stuff, was fine by me because it also showed the character growth for Daisy.
Yeah.
But
there seemed to be, I mean, the team that trusts is the team that triumphs. There seemed to be a lack of either trust or confidence between our primary known characters. May couldn't understand why Simmons was doing things she was doing and wasn't giving her the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, but I think part of that was May was expecting more timid Simmons and not really factoring in that whole other planet experience.
Okay.
Simmons has gotten a lot more backbone.
Yeah.
A lot tougher. And this season, I thought, got a lot more screen time, or a lot better screen time.
I'd say better.
And I think each character this season, again, had those moments to shine.
I'd say most of the characters had less technobabble and more genuine dialogue this season.
Well, and character moments in arcs.
Yeah.
You know, we got to actually get some good interplay between Coulson and May. We got really good stuff between Mac and Yo-Yo.
What? Mac and Daisy, when she's ready to help him out of the framework. And they're standing there on the landing, and he's saying, I don't want to go. And she's faced with the decision of, do I hit him over the head and force him, or do I let him stay? It was an amazing scene.
One of the decisions that I think benefited the season was to essentially have the main bad guys be Ada and Doctor, whatever his name is, that are in the fold with S.H.I.E.L.D.
Mm.
Because then, while you would cut back to his house or in the laboratory or whatnot, and then later to the Russians and stuff, they feel like they're central core members.
Yeah.
Not that we're cutting away from our leads.
Yeah.
To go see what the bad guys are doing.
Yeah.
And with the Inhuman arc, we're cutting away to go see what's going on with the Inhumans. And you'd have one, maybe two of our characters involved in that, so the others aren't getting any screen time.
Yeah.
And I think, effectively, if you look at the start of third season versus the start of fourth season, what they did is replaced Hunter and Bobby with the two bad guys.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I can see that.
But in a way that those bad guys have relationships with everybody.
Yeah.
You know, and then you put in Mace in place of, say, Lincoln or somebody.
Yeah.
But it's something that there's a more focus on S.H.I.E.L.D. than the Inhumans, Hydra, than whatever.
Yeah. Well, Ada 1.0 taking care of May after they killed her to save her.
Yeah.
She had some great dialogue, May did, with the whole, so you killed me to save my life. We rebooted you.
There was a lot of biological machine versus machine stuff going throughout. But never heavy-handed and stuff. It was organic into the material.
Yeah.
And again, I loved that. This was probably one of the better written seasons of superhero television that I think we've seen.
Yeah.
And there have been some that I've really enjoyed and stuff, but I thought this was probably a better season than, say, third season of Flash.
But can they keep it up? Especially now that our primary S.H.I.E.L.D. people are on the run again.
Yeah, they've been on the run before.
That's my problem.
Well, that's the thing, is they're not on the run. They've just been captured at the end of the thing.
That's a good point.
They're in the asteroid belt.
That's a good point. Okay. You're right.
I get a little tired of the tease for the next season sort of a thing.
Yeah.
On the upside, it took us long enough to watch this fourth season that the next one's going to start soon.
That's true.
So, and based on this writing, I want to get it into the rotation of stuff we stay current on.
Yeah. No, I'll agree with that.
I mean, can they keep up this writing? If before we watched this, if you had asked me this, a week and a half ago before we started marathoning this, a week ago, I guess, I would have said, no, they couldn't write this well.
Yeah.
I was wrong. They did.
Yeah, exactly.
This, if people have given up on the show, this is the season to try it again.
I agree with that wholeheartedly.
Fourth season just had some fun stuff. It acknowledged the stuff from the comics. It went in new directions, and again, the plots were solid, the episodes were fulfilling, and the characters grew, changed, evolved.
If somebody hasn't been watching for a while, my gut says watch the last two or three episodes of season three to bring you into this season. I wish we had done that. I don't know how many episodes is the right number, but because the status quo is so shaken up, because Coulson isn't the director anymore and things like that, I wish we had gone back an episode or two.
I agree with that, particularly to get background on the Doctor and a few things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I would have to rewatch those to determine if I would really recommend those or not, or just come in expecting to hit the ground running. Realize there are previous seasons and there's background that you need to to accept as it gets revealed to you.
Mm.
Because while I would have liked remembering a little bit more about the Doctor's background, ultimately it didn't really matter. He was smart enough to build an android that looked like a human.
I was even suffering, though, with, okay, but where's Lincoln? I've forgotten where Lincoln is at this point.
Yeah, but by and large, you realize he's died, and Daisy blames herself.
Yeah.
And there's enough when she's sitting in the back of the Quinjet looking at the front longingly.
Yeah.
That you can kind of piece it together. I don't think it's essential.
Okay.
Just like we didn't have to see Hope to understand the loss. You just may need to give a little bit more latitude in terms of some of this has been said before, even if you hadn't heard it.
Yeah, that's a good way to phrase it.
We didn't need to recall all of the back dialogue about Fitz's father.
Yeah.
To get what was going on here.
Yeah.
I would almost say you could skip the first three and still really enjoy this. I don't think the characters are going to have the resonance they would have if you'd watched the first three seasons.
Because
you haven't spent the time with them.
Yeah.
But the writing here is just so much better.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So at this point, I'm very curious where they're going to go with the fifth season. Definitely want to check it out. Enjoyed this quite a bit. I would say it is by far the best of the four seasons thus far.
Mm-hmm.
End of second season had some good stuff. There was some, first season, I mean, had some stuff. Second season had some moments. But just from beginning, middle, and end, this was really well done.
Yeah, I agree.
So, again, we'll watch fifth season when it happens and eventually podcast on that. Anything else on this? Are we good?
I think we're good.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.